Morning is the State of Minnesota versus Ronald Holmes, case file number 821-0308. As all parties are aware, counsel for the appellant will have 15 minutes for her argument in chief and then 15 minutes for counsel for the respondent. Finally, counsel for the appellant will have 5 minutes for rebuttal. As all parties are aware, we are conducting a Zoom argument. This matter is being audio recorded. As a result of that, we're not letting anyone do their own recordings, anyone who's listening to this or any other party. So please abide by that directive. Then we'll begin with counsel for the appellant, please.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court, counsel. My name is Gina Schultz. I'm an assistant appellate public defender, and I represent Mr. Ronald Holmes, Jr., the appellant in this matter. In this case, Mr. Holmes entered a valid, unconditional plea agreement with the prosecutor that was unconditionally accepted by the district court. Although he went on to make a side agreement with the district court judge regarding conditional release, that agreement neither became part of the plea agreement, nor was it enforceable on its own terms. Accordingly, the plea agreement that Mr. Holmes stuck with the state was neither modified nor supplanted, and Mr. Holmes is entitled to specific enforcement of its terms. In the alternative, Mr. Holmes asked for this court to reverse and remand for resentencing with a corrected criminal history score.
Counsel, now, I understand your argument that there was a side agreement with the district court regarding, you know, sentencing if he were to violate his release. But I think the transcript reflects that the parties went in without any agreement as to, as to whether the state would support his release or what conditions under which the state would support its release. And then there was a discussion with the judge about that. And the appellant asked for release with conditions. The judge agreed. But then after that, the state says, or the attorney says, and I'm quoting here, because we're kind of modifying the plea agreement with this potential for top of the box if he violates, the counsel then wanted to make a record that he is accepting that condition of release. So did it then become part of the plea agreement with the state?
No, I don't think it did, Your Honor. I think, first of all, this was an after-the-fact acknowledgement that the judge had made a decision that they should make a thorough record of. The prosecutor couldn't have been more clear on the front end before the judge made that decision that this wasn't part of the plea agreement. This was an argument to the court. The prosecutor had nothing to do with it. He did say typically a plea like this would incorporate a term like this, that either he wouldn't be allowed to make any kind of argument for release or that he would affirmatively stay in custody. But the state was extremely clear that in this case, that did not happen. They didn't reach any kind of meeting of the minds, didn't come to any agreement on that term. So the fact that the prosecutor asked to make a record after the judge had already made her decision about what was going to happen, I don't think that's enough to constitute an agreement on this material term.
Ms. Schultz, you would agree that these sort of conditions of release pending sentencing, which results with sort of, a higher sentence if you screw up than if you don't. I mean, those are rather common in Minnesota. Would that be a fair statement?
Yes. So there are two things that the parties could have done here to get a similar result. So absolutely, it's permissible under the law.
The state could have agreed to the release?
Exactly. The state could have incorporated this term into the plea agreement. That's absolutely permissible under the law. Conditional agreements have been affirmed by this court. That's fine. That didn't happen here. The state never agreed with that term. And so what we have is this kind of side agreement with a judge. And the law is absolutely clear that the judge can't be a party to a plea agreement. The judge can't unilaterally add a condition. The judge certainly could have set conditions of release, any number of conditions of release that could have, you know, satisfied her that it would have ensured that he would return to court, protect public safety. But the vacator of a valid plea agreement is not a permissible condition. The plea agreement had been accepted by the court. It had been agreed to but unconditionally by the prosecutor. That was set in stone.
But after Michelle, all of this discussion about release.
Oh, go ahead.
After all the discussion about release, didn't the state's attorney say, well, we're kind of modifying the plea agreement? Didn't the state's attorney acknowledge that now this became part of the plea agreement?
I think that my read of the record is that the prosecutor simply acknowledged that the district court had already made a decision about what was going to happen and wanted to make sure that the record reflected that. I think that is an entirely different thing than actually agreeing to that term. And in fact, I'm sorry, Your Honor.
I mean, this is the language of the state's attorney. We're kind of modifying the plea agreement. We, meaning himself as well. So I don't know why you're simply saying this is just the judge's side agreement. It looks to me like state's attorney acknowledged that he was agreeing with the modification, that there was a modification.
I disagree, Your Honor. I think that the prosecutor did acknowledge that that's what the district court was doing. And I do think that all of the parties here thought that this was a possible thing, that the
prosecutor could have said, I'm sorry, but this wasn't part of our plea agreement. You want to do something on the side, you can. That's not what the prosecutor said. So why shouldn't the prosecutor be bound by what he said?
Well, I guess for one thing, even the district court agreed that the prosecutor was never part of this. So at sentencing, I think it's, I have the page number here, but in the sentencing transcript, the district court, when she's going through the plea agreement, she says the prosecutor was never in agreement here. And she said, the prosecutor, you can correct me if I'm wrong, but it didn't look like he ever came to an agreement about this term. And so.
Well, I mean, I think I agree with Judge Klapacki. I mean, it was clear that the state didn't want the defendant released prior to sentencing. And I think you'd have a much stronger case if, you know, the prosecutor that, you know, we don't agree to any release, I'm leaving, goodbye. At that point, then, if the judge was sort of just talking to the defense attorney and the defendant about conditions of release and what's going to happen if you don't, comply, I think this would be a different case. But, you know, sort of what I got out of it was, okay, so the state was opposed release, and then the judge had thought about it and decided to release. And at that point, kind of the state re-entered the picture and sort of made the points that Judge Klapacki was making. And it's sort of like, well, if there's going to be release, you know, here's the new agreement. And is everybody on board? And so why is my and Judge Klapacki's interpretation of the events wrong?
Because I think before the judge made her decision, the prosecutor was crystal clear that it was not part of this agreement, that this was an argument to the court that they hadn't reached any agreement on any terms regarding release, that he was just going to stay out of it and the defendant could ask for release. And the judge made a decision on the defendant's request. And then the prosecutor said, okay, well, if this is what's happening, we need to make a record that we're modifying the plea agreement. But again, that's actually not what the district court thought happened. So at the sentencing hearing, she said the prosecutor was never a part of this. The prosecutor never agreed. And my understanding of the respondent's argument on appeal is really that the prosecutor never agreed. There was never a point where the defendant said, this is the offer. And the prosecutor said, okay, that sounds good to me. The prosecutor, I think as Judge Conley said, did oppose release. He said, these cases speak for themselves. I think the judge has the information needed to make this decision. So it wasn't an ardent argument, but he said, you know, we weren't able to reach an agreement here on the terms that would satisfy the state, and then mildly opposed the request. So
would your argument be affected if at the time the prosecutor said we oppose release, but if you're going to release him, judge, we got to have some downside here if he screws up? I mean, would that undercut your argument? If he or she had said that prior to the judge saying, I'm going to release him.
I think it makes it a harder case for me if it's clear that the state is kind of participating.
I do too.
Is kind of participating in this back and forth, but it wasn't. The prosecutor stayed out.
You know, Michelle, I think it's a very novel argument. You know, at the end of the day, when I look at some of these things, it's sort of like, well, wait a minute. He wanted to get out. He got out. He specifically agreed to what would happen if he didn't, you know, follow the rules. He didn't follow the rules. And now he didn't even get, you know, an upward. He kind of got just, you know, within the guidelines a little bit more. You know, that strikes me as being, that strikes me as being sort of, you know, not the way it's supposed to work. But even more important than that, I mean, you really, I'm not so sure, even if we were to agree with you, that we would agree, okay, you know, I think it was 60 months. Yeah, 60 months it is. You know, we would say remand for, you know, we'll start over or not. I mean, do you really think your client wants to be looking at, I mean, this was an amazing deal. Do you really think he wants to, well, let's go to trial now on everything. Let's see how that goes. I mean, I'm not so sure he would want that. I mean, is this really what you want us to do?
No, that's not what we're asking for. And that's why.
Not the 60 months.
We want the 60 months, exactly. And I think there are reasons that that's a fair disposition here. It's true that plea withdrawal is a possible remedy, but I think in this case, it's not the only available one. And there's actually reasons that it's not a fair one.
Is it fair given that he agreed to this sentencing additional sentence if he violated the terms of his release, and he did violate those terms?
You know, I'm not going to stand up here and say that he didn't ask for this or that he didn't understand what he was getting himself into. I understand that the record is pretty clear that he was questioned on that, but the law is also clear, and it's in his favor that this is.
And he's got a good lawyer.
I appreciate you saying that. And
so you want him to have his cake and eat it too.
I'm not going to say, did he get something for free here? Maybe. But in the end, he negotiated for a plea agreement. It took nearly a year on the drive-by shooting case to reach this agreement. There's still a valid agreement in place because it was never modified. It was never supplanted. In the end, the state breached its agreement with Mr. Holmes, and it's not fair at the remedy stage to say that that means that he should lose the benefit of his negotiated bargain.
But I mean, isn't the practical effect of let's say for the sake of argument, we agreed with you, this was a side deal, you know, 60 months it is. Isn't that going to have a chilling effect on the judges who are going to, let's say the state's always going to say, don't release them pending sentencing. We don't want that. And you know, the judges are going to do, and, you know, judges will do what they want to do. But, you know, isn't what you're asking going to have a chilling effect on judges releasing your clients prior to sentencing, with them saying, say, well, you know, I've got the safety valve, you know, if he gets out and he does something, it'll be worse. I mean, now it's, I mean, this would, I think, create a disincentive to release anybody pending sentencing for any reasons, because it's always going to be a side deal with the judge if the state opposes it. What do you have to say to that?
I disagree, Your Honor. I think in the end, I mean, first of all, the district court has a lot of options here. You can still incorporate this into the plea agreement. The state could have agreed to this. Conditional plea agreements are still on the table, even if you reverse in this case. And then the district court has any number of conditions that it can impose. Had he actually broken the law, there are a number of crimes the state could have charged. We've seen cases where judges have held defendants in contempt. And, you know, obviously there's the revocation of conditional release. There's all sorts of controls that the judge still has here. I see that my time is up. May I finish answering this question?
Please,
thank you. But what we're arguing today is that you have to do it right, that you either have to incorporate it into a plea agreement, make a valid conditional plea agreement, or have valid conditions of release. You can't sort of cross these wires and do a hybrid of the two. So we are asking this court to reverse and remand for a sentence consistent with the plea agreement.
Thank you, Ms. Schultz. We'll now hear from counsel for the respondent, please.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court, counsel. My name is Brittany Lawan, and I'm an assistant Hennepin County attorney appearing on behalf of the state of Minnesota. This court has articulated it well that essentially what appellant is asking for is the benefit of a bargain that he broke. The state did not breach its promise. There was no side agreement. Things morphed during the sentencing hearing because of the way the plea agreement went in. If you look at the transcript as a whole, you can see that the parties had an agreement with regards to a sentence of 60 months, dismissal of three cases, and two cases being pled guilty to. There was no agreement as to whether or not the defendant would be released, and that was open for the parties, for the defendant to argue, basically. And when he did argue, and when he did convince the judge that he should be released, she imposed conditions on him. In fact, conditions he asked for, and he explicitly agreed to. So to then turn around and say, I didn't know that that's what was going to happen, or this was a side deal and I shouldn't be held up to it, I agree with Judge Connolly that this would have a chilling effect. I'm unclear what more the state could have done in this instance, because the state did make a record, did note that the plea agreement was in essence being modified, that there were conditions being placed. This is a better transcript than most that I have seen when conditions are imposed and when there needs to be an understanding of exactly what the consequences will be. Based on the entirety of the record, it's clear that the defendant got exactly what he was asking for, and then he did not hold up his end of the bargain. And if you look at the sentencing transcript, I believe it's on page 8, where the district court is talking about there not being an agreement. The context of that is that there was not an agreement regarding release. It's not that there was not an agreement at all. In essence, accepting appellant's argument would mean that there could never be a part of the plea agreement that was not ironed out. You couldn't argue a sentencing range. You couldn't argue release, because appellant's argument would make it so that there was never a meeting of the minds if there was not an agreement in its entirety to every aspect of a plea. So the state respectfully asks that you reject appellant's argument with regard to the sentence and leave the 78 months in place, or excuse me, the 88 months in place.
You do agree there's a criminal history problem here, though?
Yes, I do, Your Honor. I think that this definitely falls under the Robinette amelioration doctrine. However, I would point out that it's still within the sentencing range. So I think if it's remanded and sent back to the district court to resentence with the proper criminal history score, the district court could still sentence anywhere within that range.
You know, if, I mean, I understand that argument, but the other day, if your base, if most judges, I think, look at, okay, it, you know, it's the middle of the box based on this point, or, you know, whatever, 4 points or 3 points. And so if you suddenly say, it's a different point and the middle goes down, then I think we could not say with certainty that that's what the judge, you know, that that's what the judge would do. I mean, I think most judges would say, well, wait a minute, you know, the middle was based on 4 points. The middle is now based on 3 points. You know, I think most, well, I would say many judges would say, well, if the middle's different, I'm not so sure we could say, well, there you go. It's within the range. He or she wouldn't have changed her mind. And so I think I would be nervous about saying, I would be nervous about not remanding that issue.
And I can understand that, Your Honor. And that's why I think the discretion would go to the district court on remand. However, it wouldn't be erroneous if the district court still imposed 88 because it would be within the range. But if the district court were to impose 78 for the reasoning that you just articulated, that would also be fine. But the decision should be up to the district court. I do not think that this court should remand with instructions to impose a 78-month sentence. Unless there are further questions from this court, I would respectfully rest on the arguments raised in my brief.
Thank you. I don't think there are any. Ms. Schultz, you'll have the last word, please.
Thank you, Your Honor. Just a couple of points to follow up on here. Respondent is arguing that the appellant, that Mr. Holmes asked for this and got it and shouldn't be allowed to have his cake and eat it too. I understand that sentiment. At the same time, it's possible for a defendant, especially someone like Mr. Holmes, who was desperate to get out of jail, to propose all sorts of terms that we would want the district court
to agree to it.
Absolutely. Yeah, Mr. Holmes could have said, Judge, please let me out pending sentencing. If I violate, I will give you all of my money. And I think this court would say that's not an enforceable condition. He could have said,
I think we would also say that's a board complaint.
Yes, fair enough. But my point remains that just because a defendant proposed a condition, agreed to it, understood what he was getting himself into, doesn't mean it's permissible under the law. And that's the case here, where he essentially agreed to vacate a plea or to modify a plea agreement without the assent of a prosecutor. And that was in a plea agreement that was unconditionally accepted by the court. And we know from Johnson and Jeffries that once a plea agreement is accepted and the district court adjudicates you guilty on the record, that there's a due process right to its enforcement. And he had that here. What happened after that is, even if it was an attempted modification of the plea, it wasn't a valid one because the district court couldn't be a party to it and the state didn't agree to it. And so in the end, I don't think there was any gamesmanship here. I don't think the defendant thought he could, you know, agree to something and then wiggle out of it later. It was on appeal when we're reviewing the record. It's clear that he agreed to something that's unenforceable, that wasn't appropriate under the law. And in the end, that's the district court's job, is to determine, is to oversee both plea agreements and conditions of release and to make sure that they're happening consistent with the law. So that's the primary point that I wanted to make.
So his agreement was for 66 months, right? You're saying?
For 60 months.
60 months. And indeed, the middle of the box for a resentencing with correct criminal history would be what?
78, I believe. I have to look at my brief to confirm. But yes, it looks like, yes, 78 is the presumptive. And so here, I think it is relevant to point out that he didn't commit any new offenses. He didn't get in serious trouble. That in the end, the allegation is that he was kind of a jerk to the EHM staff. And we were not challenging that alleged violation on appeal. We don't have a great record for that. But he ended up getting, 28 more months for being a jerk to EHM staff. And
in all fairness, it seems like there were, maybe I'm wrong, 25 instances where he was kind of, you know, AWOL. So I'm not sure it was just because he lipped off to whoever runs EHM. I mean, I think it was like, where are you? And what are you doing? You know? So, but anyway, I get your point, Michelle.
Yeah, thank you. And I guess I'm just trying to get at the sort of the fairness argument here of, you know, is he having his cake and eating it too? I think there's a little bit of that, but I also think the alleged allegation was pretty minor, as the prosecutor acknowledged here at sentencing. I see my time is running out. So unless the court has any additional questions for me, we do ask this court to reverse and remand for resentencing consistent with the plea agreement.
Thank you, counsel. The matter was well argued and well briefed. We will issue our decision in 90 days. That being our last oral argument of the day, we are adjourned.